Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday, April 19th, 5:32 a.m. Central Time. Grain markets a little bit higher this morning. Matt Bennett is joining us. Guys, let's start off with the drought monitor and some weather stuff.
So widespread precipitation last week caused drought conditions to ease across the majority of the Corn Belt. Conditions improved in southern Illinois, western Kentucky, northeast Iowa, and across a large portion of Michigan. A lack of precipitation caused drought conditions to worsen across the southern portion of the High Plains. A large chunk of Kansas saw conditions worsen over the last week. Conditions also deteriorated in northern Oklahoma. Both states are now experiencing flash drought conditions. When we look at the percentage of U.S. areas experiencing drought, corn country 23%, soybeans 22%, winter wheat 24%, spring wheat 26%, and cattle country 16%.
As it relates to corn and soybean country, Iowa would be the big problem when it comes to drought, but they caught a lot of rain just over the last 3 days. You look at this map, and I mean, it wasn't everywhere, but it was fairly widespread, an inch and a half of rain across Iowa into southern Minnesota, into Wisconsin, the western part of Illinois. You've got that call it northeast pocket of Nebraska, southeast pocket of South Dakota. Is drought in Iowa still a deal, Matt?
You know, the thing is when you go into the growing season without subsoil moisture, you know, it's a concern for sure because you have to rely on timely rains. We saw last year timely rains bailed us out of otherwise kind of drought conditions. The thing that's frustrating, I think, for the grower in Iowa that hasn't planted yet, of course, is that, you know, this rain showing up right whenever they're trying to get busy and doing something. So I think I talked to you about this just the other day. I mean, obviously, you don't ever want to chase a rain away, especially whenever you're on the drought monitor, whenever you're you've been dry for as long as what you've been. It's just that the timeliness is not the best. And so, you know, I think most growers are going to say if we plant in very dry conditions with enough moisture to get the crop up and going, that's ideal. And obviously, once you start getting rain, topsoil gets saturated, it gets a little less ideal. But regardless, I think most people over the long haul probably welcome this rain.
We have kind of a drier looking forecast. This is the next 5 days on my screen if you guys are watching, and it's going to be dry. What sort of activity do you think happens during the next 5 days? We know things can move fast, but we know a lot of these areas are wet. What are you thinking here over the weekend and into maybe the first half of next week?
You know, the thing you run into, Joe, just the same, like just take the last 2-3 days for me, for instance. We finally got fit. We missed rain earlier in the week in Illinois. We decide we're going to go ahead and plant corn. I think everyone knows you don't want your first drink of water on corn to be cold and right after you plant. That's pretty much what we got last night. We had about a half inch. It's not like we had a huge rain, but you know, what if the next 5 days is dry, then you got to ask yourself, you know, when is the next rain showing up? And so if you just get fit in day four, you know, it makes it very complicated on what you're going to do. I think a lot of folks are less concerned, less worried, if you will, to plant beans in front of a rain than corn. And that would go for us as well, just based on previous history. So I don't know, maybe there's more beans planted if we're just kind of planting in between windows. But those that had an inch or two of rain over the last 3-4 days, you know, they're probably going to be really pushing it to be able to get right by the time the next rain shows up.
The way the forecast looks this morning, I've got 2 Euro model maps. This is the next 5 days on my screen, and then this is the next 10 days. So it's like Thursday, Friday next week that the forecast would indicate you got a lot of rain coming back into, again, Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Wisconsin, a little bit of southern Minnesota. I am well aware that any forecast out past 4 or 5 days is largely unreliable, but that's what we're looking at right now. So I guess the question going home into the weekend is like, what kind of activity do you get before these rains come back, you know?
I think that you probably don't get a ton, you know, you don't get a ton. The thing is, again, if you do get, let's say you get a 2-day window, you know, I know a lot of growers that can plant 50% of their corn crop in 2 days,
sure.
You know, because they're running a high speed 24 row planter, you know, planting 80 acres an hour. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. They've got someone in front of them, keeping them going. I mean, gosh, You can just get a lot done, but how much activity gets done? I don't believe a great deal, actually, Joe, to be honest with you. A pretty good system went across last night. I know there was more rain in some place than others. We were actually pretty fortunate. If you looked at the radar, it looked like we were just going to get absolutely slammed. And like I said, we had a half inch. Now, we do have farms on the west side of where we farm that had an inch and a half. So, you know, there's a fair amount of rain in that system last night, which makes it complicated if we're going to show up again here late next week. Just how much gets done. And I guess my answer would be, I don't think a whole lot does get done between rain events.
Yeah. It's crazy how fast things can change. I mean, you went from Western Corn Belt's dry. Things could probably move fast to maybe not so fast. All right, let's jump to this overnight news.
So Iran is saying that an overnight drone strike by Israel failed. U.S. officials confirmed that Israeli drones struck targets in western Iran. Iran has since downplayed the attack and called it a failed attempt. Crude oil futures rallied sharply on the news, but quickly gave up the majority of the gains. Wheat futures also rallied sharply overnight, but have since seen a sharp decline. Both markets traded barely better than unchanged at 4:40 a.m. Central Time.
Wheat was up like 20 cents overnight at one point, and then it backed off. And crude oil did the same thing. Crude was up $3 or $4, or maybe even better than that, and backed off. So this is apparently a failed attempt. So I don't know what these two countries are doing. It's just like back and forth, but they're not trying real hard. So they're trying to just make a statement, maybe. I don't know.
Well, maybe they are, but at the same time, you know, whenever Iran bombed them last weekend, basically they said, don't retaliate, which, yeah, what are you going to say? You know, right. So they say, don't retaliate. Well, then Israel says, screw you, you know, we're going to throw some back at you, you know, and, I don't know, to be honest, I don't wish for anything to happen over there, Joe, no. But I kind of feel like something big might happen, because whenever you're doing what you're doing, someone's going to get ticked off at some point, you know, and it's going to get a little more serious. So I do find it amusing you know, whenever you know bombs have landed and people verify them, the other side says, you know, that it was a failed attempt. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I don't even know who to trust whenever it comes to watching the media on this right now, but it's going to be interesting. And I think you could see the kind of volatility we saw overnight moving forward, because I don't think it's the last time we're going to see this.
Yeah, we could use a rally in wheat. It's been a while. Iran is a fairly sizable wheat producer, 14 million metric tons. I mean, it's probably not enough to like shift us into bull market territory on its own, but maybe you get some short covering, speculative buying out of this deal if it continues.
Estimates for Argentina's corn crop have been cut. The USDA Attache office in Argentina has reduced its estimate for this season's corn crop to 51 million metric tons. The estimate is down 10% from January, when the crop was estimated to reach 57 million metric tons. The reduction is due to stunt disease throughout the crop, along with dry weather and fewer planted acres. The agency is predicting Argentina's corn production during the 24-25 season to reach 48 million metric tons. Corn acres are forecast at 14.8 million, the fewest planted acres in the last 6 years. Farmers will likely plant less corn next season due to stunt disease and lower corn prices.
This is not USDA official. This is not WASDE or the World Board. This is their office in Argentina with this reduced estimate. I had this graphic yesterday. I'll show you again today. So USDA's got Argentina corn. USDA official World Board has it at 55, but now the Argentina office says 51. Rosario Grain Exchange is at 50.5 and maybe on the way down from there. So these differences between the South American entities and now even USDA's own offices in South America are a lot lower than what the World Board or WASDE has indicated. The market doesn't seem to care about this, though, Matt.
No, it really doesn't. It's interesting. Some years being hesitant has really benefited the USDA. They came out smelling like a rose a few times, but last year wasn't one of them. You know, I mean, they downplayed this Argentina soybean crop, you know, that it wasn't as bad as what everyone thought. And then all of a sudden they had to make a massive shift at the very end. So I don't know. To me, I feel like the USDA is maybe being a little excessive in their slow rolling of moving around here. I think that they need to kind of drop back. Regardless, I don't think it gets your world balance sheet super tight by any means, but it probably dials you back to where we've been the last year or two. That doesn't mean you need to rally the prices we've seen the last year or two, but I think you could get back down to 300 pretty easy if they start making adjustments that other folks in the Southern Hemisphere are already making.
Well, if you take Rosario and Konab at face value versus the USDA, that's like almost a 700 million bushel difference in the in USDA versus the South American entities, which is absolutely material. And soybeans is the same thing. So this debate will continue. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer right now. I don't know if anybody knows with any degree of certainty who's right and who's wrong. Maybe it's somewhere in the middle. And these estimates, they could just stay far apart forever. And they could go down in the history books as just being separate.
Right. Last thing I'll say on this, Joe, and I'm sure you'll agree, but you know, obviously everyone was planting a little bit more corn when we had $6 and $7 corn. But I think part of the reason Argentina is planting less corn as well is it doesn't pencil that great. And so it's it's no secret that the Brazilian growers kind of struggling this year with profit margins as well. So, you know, if you're struggling with profit margins, the thing that you're spending the most money to put out, you know, could be an issue. So I think if you continue seeing input prices hang on the way that they have and price of corn not rally substantially, I mean, who knows? You know, maybe we fix a bit of this glut with less planted acres again. I mean, they're already talking about it for next year.
We get a lot of comments on YouTube, especially about how is the Brazilian soybean or corn producer, how are they able to sell this cheap and make money? And they're not making money. Brazilian farm bankruptcies are like at all-time highs. There's like a big... they're having like a 1980s moment almost as it relates to ag in Brazil, the way that it sounds.
The EPA will announce plans today to temporarily expand the sale of E15 from June 1st through September 15th. The announcement comes on the heels of several senators pushing for expanded E15 sales. In a letter to the White House, the senators claim that the expansion would increase energy security amidst unrest in the Middle East and Ukraine. Earlier this year, the EPA approved year-round sales of E15 in 8 Midwestern states starting in April of next year.
I guess this kills two birds, but they've done this before. I mean, you can say that this may help to keep gas prices down, and also it's political. It'll make the corn lobby happy. But this has happened before, and it has never really, in my experience, resulted in like a big spike in demand or anything like that.
I don't really see it making a huge impact. I don't think it can hurt. I mean, obviously, with the way the corn market's been traded, a little bit of good news is better than no good news. And so, you know, a little bit more usage for sure. I don't think, you know, margins have been pretty good for these ethanol plants here. And so, you know, I've got to think that they're going to be running full bore. I mean, numbers this week were obviously pretty low compared to last week. But, you know, sometimes in the spring, you see a little bit of a dialing back. I don't think that it's a sign of anything massive to come. I think ethanol grind's going to stay really strong overall.
It's plant maintenance. Some plants took some downtime during planting because they're not getting the grain bought. The bigger item that we're waiting on, as I ranted about earlier this week, is that GREET model stuff, which is then kicked down the road. And that's really what we need to see so we can get this SAF stuff moving. And they're really dragging their feet on that deal.
U.S. corn export sales improved last week. Net corn sales of 20 million bushels were up 54% from the previous week, but down 45% from the prior four-week average. Colombia was the largest corn buyer for the week. Net soybean sales were reported at 18 million bushels, up 59% from the previous week and up 62% from the prior four-week average. China was the largest buyer for the week. Wheat sales reductions of 3 million bushels were down noticeably from the previous week and from the prior four-week average. Indonesia was the largest wheat buyer for the week.
Nothing shocking here. Net cancellations of wheat are not crazy this time of year. The marketing year's about to wrap up. Some of this stuff will be rolled forward or canceled if it doesn't get shipped. There's still nothing. There's nothing bullish here.
No. I mean, basically, corn and beans were better because last week was horrific.
Right.
I mean, those numbers were pathetic last week. And so, yeah, you beat those, but it's not like we were setting any land speed records here either. So I do think corn exports, though, they're going to rebound somewhat. They see a 2 or 3 week lull, but I think that you're going to continue to see pretty good export sales. We're still very competitive out on the world market.
We've had some comments about China and soybeans because we've talked about this tariff stuff. And I think some people believe that China's like not buying U.S. soybeans. And the fact of the matter is China's still by a large margin has been the largest buyer of U.S. soybeans this year. And they probably will be next year too. It's just that the amounts are probably going to be reduced because of Brazil, because of their lower prices, that sort of thing.
USDA reported a flash sale of soybean cake and meal on Thursday. U.S. exporters sold 138,000 metric tons of soybean cake and meal to the Philippines for delivery during the current marketing year. Year to date, this is the fourth flash sale of soybean cake and meal, totaling 364,000 metric tons.
The soybean product market has not acted well. Meal's been kind of sideways-ish. Soybean oil made fresh lows yesterday, despite everything we've been told about the renewable push and all that. We've seen a big spike in soybean oil stocks in the United States. So I don't know. And soybeans, the market, what May futures got within, what, 3 or 4 cents of those old lows just yesterday, doesn't act real well.
No, it doesn't act well at all. And I mean, and we talked about this the other day. I mean, yeah, soybean oil stocks obviously are pretty stout right now, but at the same time, crush has been fantastic. So you would expect that your products are going to be in a readily available supply. Yeah. It's just one of those things that this crush industry is going to continue to expand. We all know that, but there's going to be growing pains for sure. And that's exactly what you're seeing. But overall, I guess I do have some concern about the bean market over the long run. I mean, I'd like to see a little bit of a rally in here, but I do think people understand that, overall, you don't have a lack of soybeans, whether it's in the world or U.S. I mean, this would be the most stocks we've seen in several years. And so I guess any spikes, a person probably ought to be at least paying close attention, maybe having something in place.
The Bitcoin halving is today.
Yep, it sure is. And it's likely already priced into the market. According to JP Morgan Chase and Deutsche Bank, Bitcoin halving will occur today and tomorrow, and it won't cause the cryptocurrency to increase, the price of the cryptocurrency to increase. Rather, the event will likely cause unprofitable Bitcoin miners to leave the market, which will result in increased consolidation. Deutsche Bank still anticipates Bitcoin prices will remain high due to regulatory changes, Federal Reserve rate cuts, and the expectation of Ethereum ETF approvals. The U.S. accounts for 40% of Bitcoin mining.
Matt, when I saw you in Nashville a couple months ago, you were wearing an orange vest. Is that because you're a Bitcoin bull?
No, it's not.
Matt walked into the bar wearing an orange vest. He's like, "Oh, I feel out of place." I'm like, "No, dude, you're in Tennessee. They'll think it's Tennessee orange, you know?"
Yeah, I guess so. That was a topic of discussion. We'll just say that. But no, I'm not a Bitcoin miner.
Okay, so here's the deal. The halving is when the amount of Bitcoin available as rewards for miners is cut in half. And in every instance up to this point, the halving has resulted in sharply higher prices. Some people think, and these bankers seem to think, that it's going to be it's already priced into the market. And that may be true. 94% of all Bitcoin that will ever be mined has already been mined. There's been a lot of crazy developments here. You go back 5-6 years, nobody would have ever thought that BlackRock and Fidelity and these big like Wall Street names would be involved in this. And now they are. So I don't know if you're going to see a reaction or not. The fact that the big banks are involved a little bit scares me a little bit. I want to believe in this. I want to believe it's like the X-Files. I want to believe that this is real, that like some sort of currency or entity separate from government control is possible and will work. It's an incredible financial story. And that's the big headline if you're a Bitcoin person today. I'll tell you what, what's that chart look like to you, Matt? Doesn't look bearish to me.
No, it doesn't at all. I mean, this Bitcoin thing, though, it's I'll have people call me and ask, "You think we ought to buy some Bitcoin?" Boy, I don't know. You know, that's a tough question to ask. It just depends on how much money you got in your pocket. But it does not look bearish to me. And you've got to think that at some point you're going to get in a situation where people are going to look. Well, right now, I look back, Joe, I bought Bitcoin at the start for $500 on one of these shady exchanges, like
they were all shady back then.
It was hard to get a hold of it, right? Yeah. And so I was sitting here messing around with it, and all of a sudden I got cold feet. I'm like, man, I don't want to lose the money that I dropped in this thing. So, I sold them, and I made $1,000. I bought several of them actually, but boy, I wish I still had those. But regardless, it doesn't look bearish to me, and I think it's something that a person needs to be very cautious with, though, if they're going to approach it individually.
I like it. I've still got the laser eyes in my Twitter photo, and part of that's just trolling people, but also because I'm a believer. So what did Cal do yesterday?
They had a positive day. Feeders were an average of $1.65 higher. Live cattle were an average of $1.46 higher. We do have a cattle on feed report coming out here this afternoon. Cattle on feed as of April 1st are estimated at 102% of year ago levels. Placements during March are estimated at 92% compared to last year. And marketings are estimated at 88% compared to March of last year. That report's going to be out at 2 o'clock Central Time.
Bullish or bearish, Matt? What are they going to say?
Consolidation phase still to me. I don't think we're going to take off big time. I don't think your big bullish numbers going to happen for another couple, 3 months. So I don't see any massive move higher right now.
Outside markets on Friday, guys, U.S. dollars off a little bit. Stocks are lower. The S&P is down 25. The Dow's down 160. Crude oil is now down 46 cents on the day in the May WTI at 82.27. It's like $4 off the overnight high. So lots of volatility there on this Middle East deal. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.